You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
Today on the Ivy Podcast, we welcome Danish Yusuf, the CEO and founder of Zensurance, a Toronto-based company that is bringing the latest technology innovations to the insurance industry. Zensurance works with the leading Canadian companies to change the way small businesses manage all their insurance needs. We hope you enjoy this episode. Danish, welcome to the Ivy Podcast.
Can you please tell us more about Zensurance and what problem are you guys solving with the services or products that you guys provide?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in the insurance industry, and just for clarity, the industry can be broken into life and health and property and casualty. They're about $500 billion industry size each in the US. We're on the property and casualty side of things. And within that, you can break it down into insurance for individuals and insurance for businesses. And we're on the business side of things. And that side has not changed for decades. A single transaction might touch five or six links in the value chain. And of course, each link takes costs, they take delays, there's a chance for errors. And so if you have a $1,000 policy and it's going through all of those hands, it can take 3 weeks to get a response. So Zensurance is building a platform that streamlines that interaction, brings the business owner as close as possible to the company ultimately taking the risk. So we want to take those 3 weeks, shrink it down to 5 minutes, and we also want to be able to turn around the feedback loop really, really fast. If something's not working, we don't want to go through six people to get approval. We want something changed and fixed and launched right back within a few days. So that's the platform we're building, and it allows small business owners to get insured really quickly, and they get the right policy since everything's custom built for that segment.
That's very interesting. And kind of just to go back a little bit prior to Zensurance, I understand you've been in consulting with McKinsey for quite some time. I'm curious, because I come from a similar background, how did that experience has helped you as far as transitioning to founding and running your own business?
Yeah, so I spent almost 7 years in consulting. And I'd first say that much experience actually hurt my thinking on becoming a founder. And let me explain why. So as a typical MBA, anytime I had a decision to make, I built a financial model, I calculated the NPV, and I was looking at the NPV of a career in consulting and that of a startup. And no matter how hard I tried, whatever assumptions I put in, the startup always lost because of the discount rate we had to apply to the terminal value. So I would say, look, if I stay in consulting, I make X every year. Over the years, it's highly predictable, relatively risk-free. That always won out. And so despite multiple times thinking of joining a startup, I never ended up doing so. And it took me 6 years to convince myself, you know what? It's not about the money. It's going to be about the excitement and the journey that I want to go on. And in that, my consulting life really did help. And I think there's two key skills that I took away. They're on opposite sides of the spectrum. On the one hand, in consulting, we dealt with very large companies. So I learned a lot around how do you work with different executives, different stakeholders to get what you want out of it ultimately. And today we deal with a lot of insurance companies, and all of those skill sets really came in handy. And on the flip side, the ability to dive right into databases and spreadsheets, crunch the numbers, and really help solve complex problems. I think that was another critical thing I took out. Probably my favorite thing I do these days is problem solving. And I'll sit with different teams, we'll pull up the data, we'll pull up the A-B test, and we'll really dive through it, comb through the results, and come up with what we think is the right answer. It may be right, it may be wrong, but that's the other big skill that I took away from 6 or 7 years in consulting.
Well, that's very interesting. And from my perspective, I come from information technology, software development, kind of that's my domain, that's my niche. We're operating, you know, like executive search, and still we have some management consulting aspects in that space. So I'm curious, And I would imagine technology plays a significant part of your business, especially in insurance. Which technology innovation trends you may be researching or keeping an eye out and potentially looking to implement at Zensurance?
Yeah, so the base platform that we have, I'll be honest, it's not rocket science. There's a lot of complexities in it, but essentially it's a Kayak or an Expedia for commercial insurance. You've got different types of businesses coming in. You have to ask the right set of questions and you have to apply the right pricing model. So that base platform, intuitively, it sounds straightforward. However, there's a lot of AI that goes on behind the scenes to make sure we're doing the right thing for each customer. And I use the term AI broadly. It's not there yet. There's a lot of rules-based logic. So I think just taking large sets of data and applying various forms of transformation on it is the biggest thing we're spending time on. So for example, there's about 15 industries we focus on. Each of those 15 industries has about 20 sub-industries. In each sub-industry, there's 30 different types of activities. And if you go on and on and on, there's about 3 billion permutations we are focused on. And in order to properly service customers in each of those 3 billion cells, we have to get really good at crunching numbers and crunching and running through the analytics really, really fast. That's probably the biggest priority for this year. In future years, we'll look at other things. Blockchain has come up a bunch of times. I'm still not convinced that there's a real need for that in our space, but it's something we'll look at in the future.
You've mentioned AI, and I can't help but ask in terms of RPA or machine learning or any other advanced technologies. I'm sure they're reinventing insurance industry as a whole. What do you think these trends and how will they impact your industry from innovation standpoint? And what are your thoughts on best strategies to adopt some of these technologies?
Yeah, so if I look at the industry overall, we're currently based in Canada and we're focused on Canada at this point. There's probably a few hundred thousand people working in our space. The quoting insurance, processing it, billing for it, collecting for it, it's a pretty big industry. The average age has got to be in the high 40s, maybe 50s. So over the next 15 years, a big chunk of the folks in the industry will retire. The number of people joining the industry is not great. Frankly, you generally don't have people going through high school or undergrad saying, I want to be an insurance broker. As great as the industry is and as exciting as the opportunities are, it's just not one of those things people grow up and think about. So I think a big impact to the industry would be the falling off of 50% of the workforce over the next two decades. The automation, and you know, you take the buzzword that you like, RPA, AI, whatever that is, essentially what we're saying is the manual component of a lot of the work gets done by machines instead of people. So the huge, huge impact would be replacing all of those folks that are leaving the industry without having a negative impact on the margins of the industry. And I think all of the big companies you talk to, they're worried about it, but I haven't seen a huge shift towards that just yet, at least in Canada. I've seen a couple of players in other countries. And what we want to be is that partner of the insurance companies that allows them to work through that big transition without having a big impact.
A lot of companies these days, and majority, they're driven by certain transformation initiatives, whether that's digital transformation, cloud transformation, or even people transformation. Curious from your perspective, what would you say are the key characteristics that a digital business needs to have in place in order to be successful? And how can some of the organizations build and nurture such traits?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let me say two things and then, you know, we'll dive into each. One is leadership that's willing to take the risk. It is a big risk. There's a lot of money involved. So you need that. And then second, regardless of whether you're a traditional business or you're a digital business, you're a business of people. So you have to manage and have an exciting, or you have to have a workforce that's engaged. So on the first point in my consulting life, I spent a lot of time with large companies. And the challenge with this quote unquote transformation was it might take several hundred million to even $1 billion to transform all of your legacy systems, the processes, and get to the point where you want to be. And it might take 5 or 10 years. Quite often, the CEO or the senior management that would start this journey is not going to be the CEO or the senior management that will be there on the other side of the journey to reap the rewards. So how do you create the incentives for people to take that massive risk only for their successor or their successor's successor to be in charge of the company that's taking advantage of it? So that's one you have to figure out how to solve depending on the size of your company and your incentives. That's something definitely to think about. And many companies have overcome it. It's just a conversation that kept coming up. On the other point I mentioned, you definitely need to realize that ultimately you're just a business of people. Even though we're a startup, we're investing heavily in technology, we're 75 people, every person has a family, they go home, they have career aspirations. So the big thing I spend probably half of my time on is just making sure every day people are motivated, they're excited to come to work, they bring their A game every day, and really half my time is managing the team. The other half is everything else. You shouldn't just forget, just because you're a technology business, you're still a people business first.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because a lot of companies that fail at some of these transformations that dive straight to something specific like, you know, cloud transformation or anything digital or mobile without first getting the, you know, the people transformation aspect and getting the kind of the employee buy-in, so to say, into the whole vision. So I'm glad to hear that from your perspective. To shift gears a little bit, I want to talk a little about hiring and how you attract the top and the best talent to Zensurance. For those candidates that they get to interview with you, do you tend to get creative with your interviews? And if so, kind of what do you look for in some of the responses aside from the traditional question and answer?
Yeah, I'm afraid in this one, I have a very traditional answer. There's a lot of things that I think work well. For me, one question is, and I generally get a sense within the first minute, would I be excited to spend an 8-hour flight with this person or a 3-hour dinner with this person? Would I feel that, hey, I have a lot to talk about and we can solve problems together? For me, that's the biggest thing. Yes, we have technical interviews, we have exercises, we'll have presentations, but by the time they get to the final stage and I'm there and I spend half an hour with the individual, assuming it's a little bit more of a senior person, that's the biggest thing for me. Because ultimately, like I said, we're a people business, and every individual needs to bring the ability to solve problems. Regardless of whether you're on the sales floor, the engineering side, you're in marketing, you're just solving problems. And I want to feel that every individual can work in a team to solve problems. So it's a very traditional thing. Many companies do it, but I still think that works well.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. And I like the analogy that you had presented as far as that initial perception, so to say, and thinking from a standpoint of, you know, I like what you said, being able to spend an eight-hour flight with that person or even something, you know, like a dinner that creates a different perspective, I guess, when you meet somebody as part of that interview process.
Yeah, and I also say that it's not 100%. I remember there was this one example where I greeted the person at the door, we walked to the meeting room, we went that 30 seconds. I wasn't sure. Right away, I got this feeling, hey, I'm not sure. But over the course of the 30-minute interview, I got really excited about this person. Just they were a little bit quieter to begin with. It took them a little bit longer to open up. But after the first 10 minutes, I was really excited about this person. So I always say, you know, don't only rely on that first judgment. There's the popular book, Blink. I do believe in that, but just temper it with the rest of the experience and don't really just judge based on the first 10 seconds.
Makes sense. Given the current market conditions, particularly in U.S., I'm sure Canada is similar. From information technology perspective, I guess, some domains of that space are almost in negative unemployment rates. So I would imagine, you know, in insurance industry as a whole, it's also, you know, people are not sitting on the bench, so to say. What are the most in-demand skill set that you guys are currently looking for, and what strategies have helped you to attract the top talent?
Yeah, another great question. Something we spend a lot of time on is getting the best people. And I think, yeah, this is a tough one because we definitely feel the pinch of negative unemployment. So I'll give you an example of some things that we've tried that seem to be working. We want to demonstrate to people that this is an exciting place to be where we solve good problems. Everyone says that, but how do you actually get people to truly believe what you're saying? So we started a series of brief videos called Zen Moments. We get different people from different parts of the industry. We talk over a video for a couple of minutes about their key problem that they're solving for and what role they're hiring for to solve that problem. And then we push those videos out over social media. That has had a tremendous impact, the amount of engagement we get, the amount of applications we get off of that, because it has that human feel of, hey, this is the hiring manager, this is who you're working with, and they're talking about the actual problem that if I were to join, I would be able to solve. And then quite often, that problem that we describe is the exercise we give to the individual as part of the second round interview that they have to come and bring their ideas. They might write some code for it, they might have a presentation, they might just talk through it, but that whole from a video to the first round to the second round, all linked around solving a problem. That's what we try and push forward. What that attracts is people that want to solve that problem, and people that are engaged with us on social media end up coming and really fitting into the culture. That's something we've tried over the last 3 months, and it's really helped. We've hired about 15 people over the last quarter. We've got another 40 people to hire this year. And I think we're just going to keep trying that until it stops working, and then we have to figure out what's next.
Well, it sounds like it's working for you guys. And
yeah,
it looks like pretty tremendous growth. So definitely congratulations on that.
Thank you. We still do all of the standard university job fairs, events. We still do all of that. We're toying with the idea of having an open house this summer where we say, hey, anyone that's interested in any role, just come in. There'll be 80 of us employees here, plus maybe 200 people, hopefully, that join. That might be sort of a speed dating type initiative. We'll give that a try as well. Because if you have to hire, you need net 30 more people. You need to hire 35. You need to interview second round 200. You need to interview first round 800. That means you need to screen 4,000 people. That's huge numbers you're dealing with.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, considering the batting average as far as the interviews and that whole process, it's a significant undertaking. And, you know, you mentioned something like a career fair. It used to be very popular, but if for some reason, you know, we don't see or hear a lot about those strategies lately. But from my experience, as we help companies scale and grow, especially from IT perspective, I've seen pretty good successful case studies when companies leverage, you know, something as simple as that. So I think you guys are on the right path. Just to go back to our initial conversation at the very beginning, I'm curious, what has kind of motivated you to start and launch your, you know, this company in general in insurance? Is that you've always had this kind of passion for that particular industry, or how did that all come about?
Yeah, it could have been any industry, honestly. I was more excited about doing something new and unique. It just happened to be insurance. And the reason it's insurance is for the last couple of years in consulting, my clients happened to be insurance. And the reason they happened to be insurance is I did one project. I liked the consultants, the people on our side that I worked with, and had a great time spending a few months with them. And so I said, no matter what it is, I want to work with these people again. And those people happened to be insurance folks. And so I did a couple of projects in insurance, and then I became the insurance expert myself. So when I had ideas of launching something of my own, naturally it landed in insurance because that's what I did all day, every day. So that's why it's insurance. Why, like you might ask, why did I want to start my own business. I think part of it was the allure of watching shows like Silicon Valley. As fake as it is now that I live through it, life is nothing like that. But there's that certain allure of the star status that comes with launching a business and starting it. You see all of your friends from different walks of life trying out different things, and you really only focus on the success stories. You forget that there's 1,000 other people that didn't make it, but you focus on the 5 and you say, wow, how cool would it be if I could give that a shot? And I was getting to an age where I got married right around the time I quit my job and started Zensurance. And I said to myself, if I don't take this big risk now, it will just become really, really hard in 5 years. And you get so comfortable in a big job that I said, look, I just have to take this risk now. Otherwise, I will regret it. And even if I end up failing, I can always go back to another job. So it ended up being this confluence of factors of friends showing things that can be exciting, me being at a certain critical juncture in my life, insurance happening to be the industry I knew a little bit about. All of that came together. I said, let's give it a try. And worst case scenario, I'll learn a lot and then go back to a job and live, you know, a good life in a different way.
That's very exciting, and definitely thank you for sharing, providing more insight into that story. I can definitely relate, having launched and tried and, you know, failed multiple times, and personally in my businesses, I can definitely relate to what you're talking about. As part of this journey, and I'm sure as you lead your organization these days, I'm sure you read a lot. Curious, what are you currently reading, and what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why?
Yeah, the one book that really captures the essence, I think, of startup life is Ben Horowitz's The Hard Thing About Hard Things. I read it first a few years ago, and I read it every couple of years now. It really, to me, it demonstrates the value of grit. It's really, really hard every day. There's problems coming at you. You lose an employee. Funding falls through. Customer leaves you. You get yelled at by somebody. But that feeling of, I'm just going to keep plowing away at it until I, you know, it's going to hurt, but I'm just going to keep going through it. And I think every entrepreneur that is going through this journey will learn a lot from this book. And I recommend it to everybody in my office. There's a copy on my desk at all times. Anyone comes, I hand them the copy. I said, please read it and then come back to me in 2 weeks. Let's talk about it. That would be one thing that I think everyone should look at reading. There's another one that I'm currently reading. I forget the name of it. It's written by Professor Kareem Lakhani at Harvard Business School. Age of AI, I believe it is.
And competing in Age of AI.
Yes, that's the one. I'm about 3/4 of the way through. And I love it because our big focus in 2020 at Zensurance is using data to compete with the incumbents. And there's a lot of interesting stories and analogies in there that completely apply to what we're doing. So that's the one I'm reading today, and it's also very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to both. Both are great examples. I've actually just finished Professor Lakhani's book, and it was very insightful, very insightful. Dinesh, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today and providing all, you know, the great valuable lessons and insights. I appreciate your time, and I actually look forward for us to reconnect on the Ivy podcast in a couple of years and see what has changed, how far you guys have grown, and kind of reconnect at that time as well.
Absolutely. A lot of challenges ahead, but we'd be happy to connect in the future and see what's changed.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes.